Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jamie Smith here to talk about Burnley. I write and edit the No Nay Never newsletter that goes out via Substack every Monday, and it's free, so please subscribe if you'd like to hear more.
Hi, I'm Ted. You can find me hosting the A Tad Predictable podcast on EPL Index. You can find me at Tad Predicts on Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. I'm just going to start off with a blanket apology for people that are regular listeners of the show for the last month or so. Life has just largely intervened, but we managed to all get together in one place, even though I had a flight earlier this morning. So if I'm a little frazzled, please forgive me. We'll start off talking about the transfer window since we haven't had a show since then, partially hence the apology. I was just curious who you guys thought since the close of the window. Who do you think won the window, and is there a club that you think particularly left themselves a lot of work to do on the pitch because they didn't do enough off it?
Yeah, well, I think it's not to dump on your topic idea, but I think it's always a bit spurious to talk about who won the window, right? Because it's...
Sure, very early.
Players and fees, and like you've got to see how it all shakes out. But there's a few teams that I think had pretty good windows, added to the squad in the right way, sold well. I don't want to talk about all of them because I don't want to steal Tab's thunder, and I don't know who he's going to talk about. But I actually think Tottenham had a really strong window. I think there was the possibility for the Harry Kane stuff to completely overshadow their summer, and they've got the new manager coming in, Ange Postecoglou. I think Postecoglou's already put a stamp on how he wants Tottenham to play. And to be honest, I don't think Kane was going to fit that particularly well. As Kane gets older and more knackered and his ankles work even less, he wants to play deeper and deeper and dictate play. From what I understand of Postecoglou's tactics, and Kev, you'll have a deeper understanding of this, but I've seen Tottenham already this season, be very impressed with Turf Moor. They want a penalty box type striker to finish off their attacking moves, and Kane doesn't seem to want to be that sort of player anymore. Interesting to see how he gets on at Brighton, who seem to want a penalty box striker. But yeah, I'm not convinced Kane was a very good fit there. So while I'm sure Postecoglou and Spurs fans would have rather had that done earlier in the summer, they got good money for him. I think around 100 million is a fair price for Kane at his age. And they seem to have invested it quite well. I think the danger when you sell a star player, the sort of icon of the club, is that you try and spread yourself too thinly. You can't necessarily go out and buy a £100 million striker to replace Kane, so you have to try and spread the money around. Spurs have obviously got experience of doing this before, right, with Gareth Bale. They had a few misses with that money, a couple of hits. Christian Eriksen was one who came in with the Bale money, wasn't it? So they should know what they're doing with this kind of situation. And when you consider some of the fees that have gone for players this summer, I think James Maddison, £40 million, has the potential to be one of the best bargains around, which is not to say a £40 million player, but when you look at the market for central midfielders, defensive midfielders in particular this summer, the fact that Maddison is a proven Premier League talent, a guy who's played for England, albeit not very often, £40 million for Maddison, who's going to replace Kane's sort of creativity, if not his goal scoring, seems to be an absolute steal. The jury's out on the new goalkeeper, but some of the defensive additions seems to be pretty exciting as well. And in Brennan Johnson, they've added that sort of X factor in attack as well. So I think Spurs are in decent shape to have a much better season than last year. And considering the Kane situation, I think they've had as good a window as could have expected, really.
Yeah, definitely Spurs are one of the teams that you look at. I think another team that also sold a player for quite a bit of money, West Ham, I think had a decent window, considering they knew they were losing Declan Rice heading into this window. And then you sort of worry about them because it seemed like the manager had certain players that he wanted, and then the new technical director had certain players that he wanted. It seems like they've made a blend of it. There's some players in there, you know, James Ward-Prowse, et cetera, where you think maybe Moyes wanted him in with how Moyes plays with the set pieces and stuff. But then you have signings like Kudus and Alvarez from Ajax. Maybe that's more the technical director getting involved. But yeah, considering they had the Declan Rice money, everyone knew they had that money. They could have been rinsed throughout the entire window, but I think they've made some pretty decent signings that should help them out in the long term. Maybe not short term whilst they gel in, but certainly in the long term. But yeah, Ward-Prowse has been quite short term in terms of his impact. He's already helping them. And then I'm going to say Nottingham Forest had an interesting window. Obviously, they had the 5 billion signings that they did last time around. Seems the same thing happened this year. Maybe influenced by, you know, the Brennan Johnson move to Tottenham late in the window. It allowed them to get a couple of players in Sangare, and obviously Callum Hudson-Odoi came in quite late for them. But yeah, Origi came in on loan as well from AC Milan. I think they've done some interesting stuff, and considering the form of Owani, they could be quite an interesting team. And obviously the goal for them would be staying up again this season. If they can do that, I think they've got a really good building block and set of players that they can move forward on next season. I think the last team I'm probably going to mention is Man City, because I don't think any other team in the league has done enough to close the gap to Man City. So from that perspective, I think Man City are, you know, they come out of the window as winners. They obviously were busy. I mean, ridiculously good defense last season, and they only go and add Josko Gvardiol to it, which is just almost unfair. But yeah, obviously Doku comes in, Kovacic comes in. Maybe Kovacic comes in to try do what Gundogan was doing last season. Matheus Nunes comes in, who was quite lively last season as well. So look, the City have now gotten to that point where they don't need to break the bank to try and sign players, because now they have that reputation and players want to come play for them. Obviously at the beginning they needed to convince the players to come in. They don't really need to do that anymore. And then also, if you look at the funding that they've put into their academy, a lot of the academy players end up funding most of these moves anyway. So yeah, I think for City, fantastic window in terms of what they've done individually, and then also looking at the rest of the league and wondering if anyone's closed the gap to them. I don't think they have. And as I mentioned, West Ham and Nottingham Forest were shouts there.
Gotcha. Some great picks there, and especially biased towards the Tottenham one. And I do agree with you, Jamie. It was nice to finally get that over with, but people have already heard two episodes of Kane Talk, so I'll spare everyone. The short version, though, is yes, you're absolutely right. The Tottenham do need somebody to just be in the box and also make runs to stretch the defense a bit more than Kane can do at 31 with those ankles and also his general athletic profile. On the other side, are there teams that you think maybe didn't do enough to maybe ensure your safety or ensure European football or something like that?
Yeah, I think there's probably Aston Villa fans listening who are like, whoa, what about us? What about us? And again, Villa are a team I've seen already. Villa had a very good window. I think Diaby's going to be one of the stars of the season. So I think remiss of us to miss them out. In terms of worst windows, I think it's really difficult to look beyond Wolves. It seems like the financial situation at that club has just made it very, very difficult. They've obviously lost the manager. Gary O'Neill has come in. He's got a very difficult job, sort of similar to the situation he inherited last summer. And you look down the list of players that they've signed. I'm seeing someone called Tom King from Northampton on a free. Exciting. It seems
first
like they've
11,
sold everything.
Surely.
Oh, yeah. It seems like they've sold basically anything that wasn't nailed down, right? Ruben Neves going to the Saudi League. I think we're going to come on to the Saudi League, but that's one of the few players who's in his sort of prime years. To lose Neves, a guy who was touted for going to Barcelona or Manchester United a year ago, for him to go to Saudi for not that much money in the grand scheme of things, was a bit of a red flag, I think, if you're a Wolves fan. Then they've lost Nunes to Man City as well. One of the deals that some of that I can't really get my head around as a Burnley fan is Nathan Collins leaving Wolves for Brentford. Wolves picked Collins up for about 18, 20 million last summer, and he had a pretty good first season at Wolves, the sort of player that you can probably build a defence around and hopefully rely on for years to come. And this summer, they've sold him to Brentford for a small profit on last year. From what I gather, Wolves are in a really sticky situation when it comes to FFP. They've overspent in the past. They needed to have a summer of profit just to balance the books, really. It really looks like that's what they've done. From an accountancy point of view, maybe that they've had the summer window that they needed, but from a putting a team out on the pitch to stay in the Premier League point of view, I think they're going to find it really difficult. Obviously, from a Burnley perspective, we have to look at Wolves as one of the teams that we need to finish above now. I think they're in for a difficult season. And when one of your star signings is bringing back Matt Doherty on a free, I think that sums up where Wolves are at right now.
Yeah, definitely. We did a reckless prediction podcast on our podcast where before the transfer window closed, we sort of try and make spicy hot take picks. One of mine was that Wolves would get relegated, and yeah, I'm feeling slightly confident about that, although it does seem like Gary O'Neill has done well to sort of get everyone on board, which I wasn't sure he was going to be able to do. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. For me, in terms of disappointing windows, I think I have to look at Fulham. Obviously, you lose Mitrovic, which is massive for them because he was guaranteed goals for them. And as we know, first thing foremost, you need goals if you want to stay in the Premier League. And I don't know if they've done enough to replace all the goals that he had. Obviously, the likes of Jimenez have come in. Whether or not that's going to be enough, we will see. Iwobi coming in was quite interesting. But yeah, some of these signings, okay if the rest of the squad is good. Like Iwobi coming in as a squad depth player is great. But if he has to come in and has to deliver and has to be an important player, maybe that's a bit more worrying for me. So yeah, they've lost a lot of goals. I don't think they've replaced them. And it's going to be tricky for them to stay up this season. Another one I'm going to mention is obviously Everton, the club that Iwobi has come from. I don't know how many times they need to circle, you know, the drain in terms of getting relegated for them to realize, okay, we need to actually sort this team out. I kind of have no sympathy for them when they have situations where season after season, they have to rely on the fitness of DCL. We all know DCL is going to get injured at some points during the season. Obviously, you don't wish injuries on players, but we know it's going to happen based on precedent. For them to not address that as well as I thought they could have, it should be a bit disappointing and worrying for them. We'll see whether or not they will get enough goals this season. But yeah, it just seems like they're going to be stressing about his fitness throughout the entire season. They bring in the likes of Danjuma on loan. Whether or not they're going to have enough of an impact, we will see. But yeah, I'm worried about Everton, and maybe this is now just they've pushed it one season too much in terms of risking whether or not they're going to stay up. And perhaps, obviously Everton fans won't want to hear it, but perhaps maybe the ownership have looked at the situation and said it might be better to go down, get rid of a lot of these players that are on big wages and try and come back straight away. But as we've seen with many clubs, It's not that easy to just bounce straight back up. So it's certainly a gamble. But yeah, I think Everton are one of those teams that could get relegated. And speaking of teams that could get relegated, maybe I'll throw it to you guys, because I think they've done well in terms of what I think their ambitions are. But Luton, I don't think they've done enough to stay in the Premier League, but I think they've done enough to secure their squad to try and get back into the Premier League again next year when they go down, which for me is a great strategy for clubs that are maybe not as financially powerful as other clubs, where get the promotion over two seasons, so to speak, and then in that third season, try stay in the Premier League. I'm in favor of them sort of realizing where they are and saying, look, we're probably going to go down, but what we're going to do is we're going to secure a team that is going to be strong enough to get us back into the Premier League, you know, next season after we get relegated. And then we're going to try and stay in the Premier League after that. I don't know if you guys agree with that sort of strategy or if they should have maybe done more to try and just stay in the Premier League this season.
I think it's a good point. I think Burnley have done something similar in the past, right? The first time we got promoted to the Premier League, it was a bit of a surprise. It came up through the playoff. No one was expecting it. And we came straight back down, having had to change manager mid-season. But then the second time, when we got promoted under Sean Dyche, came down straight away. It was that kind of thing. We had the team in place and then romped to the Championship title and then had 6-7 years in the Premier League. So I think it's a viable strategy if you get it right. I think you're right that Luton have probably just first and foremost banked the Premier League money. I think it's Luton have unique challenges in that they have to get players who want to go to Luton and be in a relegation battle. Yes, players always want to play in the Premier League, but not necessarily for Luton, especially a team that have that sort of old-fashioned. I don't want to sound too critical of Luton because it's a style that worked for Burnley for quite a long time, but Burnley, by the end, were basically the only team playing that sort of football. And this season, Luton are going to be basically the only team playing that sort of football. Very sort of physical, in-your-face, reliance on set pieces. And it got them out of the Championship, and all credit to them, but I'm not sure it's going to work at a higher level. But they've signed players who are going to be outstanding in the Championship next season. So I think they've certainly done business this summer with next season in mind. But the proof has to be in the pudding, right? Luton probably will go down this summer, and then it's a question of whether they can bounce back. You can only judge whether or not it's been a successful strategy. If they get promotion next season, that's got to be their aim.
Yeah, I do think we have seen that a fair few times, that I definitely think you're onto something of like a side getting promoted, buying a bunch of like some of the better or best Championship players and then just going down and then doing well in the Championship. And also your point about Everton might maybe needing to go down to get rid of some of their players brought me to another side question, if you'll permit me, which is, does it seem like it is getting harder and harder for clubs to actually sell players at like the bottom, I don't know, quarter of their squad, where they're like on wages that are too high and prohibitive for them to move abroad and are like choosing to not play football and keep the wages rather than going to places where they can, or clubs just permaloaning people for like 4 or 5 years so the contract runs out, or like Nicolas Pepe having to just cancel the contract? It just seems like that's happening more and more from my eye.
I think you're right, and I think it's partly the financial might of the Premier League, right? Like, we're going to come on to the Saudi League next, but I think the Premier League is so financially powerful compared to every other league in the world. You've got teams like Crystal Palace, who had Wilfred Zaha on £100,000 a week or something and offered him £200,000 a week to stay, and he decided to go somewhere else. Okay, that's an example that's not quite relevant to what you were saying in terms of moving players on. But it just shows that if you have a top player, you can pay them more than anyone in any other league. Like, there's teams at the top of La Liga or the Bundesliga, certainly in France, that aren't paying players anything like what Zaha was on at Palace. So I think you're right. Stockpiling players is certainly something that's becoming more evident in the Premier League. I think you look at Chelsea as an example, who've done that. What Chelsea are going to do with all these players that they've signed, I have no idea. Maybe someone at that club knows what they're doing. I'm not sure they do. But yeah, moving on these players when they get older and their contracts are bloated, it's going to be tricky. And unless they can sort of palm them off to the Saudi League, which might be what they're trying to do in January when the Saudi League is trying to sign players again, I think there are going to be a lot of clubs in difficult position financially when they've got these bloated squads with experienced players on good Premier League wages that essentially hardly anyone else in world football wants to pay.
Yeah, we'll certainly get onto the impact of the Saudi League. But in terms of the Premier League itself, I think if you look at, I think Ndombele is a perfect example of what you're talking about, where Tottenham signed Ndombele. He signs on a massive contract. But no disrespect to Tottenham, Ndombele is not coming to Spurs unless they offer him that big contract. And so a lot of clubs are going into those situations where they want to sign a player, they're interested in a player, but because the Premier League is so competitive, we have to have that player to sort of, you know, be competitive or reach our goals. But we have to overpay for them in wages. Yes, we know the Premier League famously overpays for players in terms of transfers, but they also massively overpay in terms of wages. And unless you overpay, you're not going to get those players. So either you have to overpay for players or go with sort of like a Brighton or a Brentford route where you're trying to find the player. So you're trying to find Ndombele before he became Ndombele at Lyon. Like, you've got to pick a struggle. And a lot of the Premier League teams don't necessarily have the depth in terms of their recruitment departments where they can go find players like Brighton seem to find, or like a Brentford seem to find, or like what a Liverpool used to do in the past. So it ends up being we have to just pay whatever that player wants to come to us, and then it's difficult to move those players. So the loan market has become really, really enticing for Premier League teams where, okay, we can send the player out on loan, recoup most, if not all, of the wages that we would be paying them, and get some sort of revenue from loaning them out as well. If we can do that over the course of their contract whilst waiting to find a permanent deal for them, that's one way that they're going to be able to sort of alleviate those massive wages that they have to pay, and probably something Chelsea will be looking to do. I know, James, you've mentioned, you've mentioned, you know, a question on how Chelsea will do it. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those players end up going on loan in order to sort of alleviate some of that strain that they're going to have.
All right. You already teased it twice now, Jamie, so we may as well get into it now. Part of the solution for this, for clubs this summer, was the Saudi League coming in and being able to pay not only Premier League wages, but like yearly wages weekly. Obviously, people have some moral issues with it. From a club finance perspective, it's obviously been massively helpful to clubs that have overstockpiled on players. What have you guys made of kind of the arrival of the Saudi Pro League on the global stage as one that is apparently at least a financial force?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult to get into the morals of it, isn't it? I mean, Saudi Arabia are well within the rights to try and establish a football league. Whether it constitutes sports washing, I think, is probably up for debate. For me, it definitely is. But from a football perspective, I think it's clear that they intend the Saudi Pro League to become a major player. I think they're spending on players in a way that we've maybe not seen in a sort of minor league since the Chinese Super League, right? That obviously went very badly, but largely down to the impacts of COVID. There's a lot of players went to the Chinese Super League, earned a lot of money, kind of got stuck there. Teams have had to be shut down because of the impact on the finances of the pandemic. So assuming that there's no repeat of that sort of freak situation that hits the Saudi Pro League, they've got almost limitless financial backing, right? The way that they've sort of split the league into two parts now, the clubs that are backed by the state, the four, the sort of power four, the traditional big four in Saudi Arabia, and then the rest of the league. I think what was interesting about the players that have signed from European clubs, I've just read it's 37, which over one summer is a lot, but the way people have been going on about the Saudi League, you'd think it was hundreds, right? So relatively few players have gone this summer. I'm sure more will go in January, like I said, but it's relatively few. And in terms of the big fees, you're looking at Neymar going from PSG. PSG wanted rid of Neymar. That suited them. And then the Neves deal, which I've mentioned. Neves is a real rarity in this summer's deals with the Saudi Pro League as a player who's probably got his best years ahead of him. He'll probably see Saudi as somewhere where he can go for a couple of years and then come back to a top team in Europe. the Saudi League's going to face a lot of the same challenges as other sort of upstart leagues, and you can maybe include MLS in that, right? And that experienced players coming towards the end of their career will be happy to go there for a payday, whether the football's competitive enough to keep them in international squads. We've had a big debate here in England about Jordan Henderson and whether he should have been in the England team after deciding to go to Saudi Arabia for the money. So I think there's a lot of ways it could shake out, but I suspect for the next 2 to 3 years, the sort of short term to medium term, we're going to see a lot of players going to Saudi Arabia who their teams are quite happy to let go. The Mitrovic one that Tad mentioned stands out as one where the team really wanted to keep him and the player decided he was off. So I think for now, teams are going to see the Saudi Pro League as somewhere where they can sort of ship out unwanted goods.
I think probably the biggest worry for the Premier League was the fact that the Saudi League's window closed after the Premier League window closed. And let's say if you had that Mitrovic situation, but it played out a week after the Premier League window closed, what do you do if the player says, I'm never going to play for you again, let me go? So going forward, it's going to be interesting to see if that continues in terms of the timelines. But yeah, I won't necessarily touch on the moral side of things from the Saudi League perspective, but from what they're trying to do, and I mentioned it, I think, last year, maybe on either on here or on my podcast, is they won a team in the Champions League, not just one, they won a couple of teams in the Champions League. And if that's not going to happen, they're going to start their own Super League. So the Super League we saw that was trying to come in, you know, with a couple of Premier League teams and other top European teams around the world and got quashed. Well, Saudi have basically said to UEFA, give us teams in the Champions League or we're going to start our own. And UEFA are going to have to make a decision on how they go about that. We've seen it play out with the PGA Tour in the US with golf, where the PGA Tour sort of said, no, you can do one. Any players that go to Saudi Arabia aren't going to be involved in the PGA Tour, and we're not going to help you guys get a TV deal. And then basically a year later, PGA Tour ended up joining up and linking up with Golf Live, I think it is what it was called, and they get a TV deal. And you know, it's the PGA Tour sort of backtracking and realizing either we join them or we're going to start losing out on a lot of money. I think maybe that might happen with the Champions League, where they just decide, look, it's better to give them a couple of teams in the Champions League rather than losing out on the likes of, you know, I don't know which big clubs you want to add in there, but maybe it's better to go with the clubs outside of England. But, you know, the Real Madrids, the Bayerns, etc. If they then join the Saudi Pro League, and you can imagine some Premier League teams are going to want to be involved in that, it's going to be curtains for the Champions League. So that is the end goal for the Saudi Arabia League. Obviously, we mentioned at the moment the squad depth isn't that great for them at the moment, but the difference between what China was trying to attempt and what the Saudi League was trying to attempt is there's more of a long-term vision with the Saudi League. They're going to keep pushing. They're going to keep coming back window after window, signing players. We've seen young players going into that league as well, not just old players looking to get a final paycheck. And I think something as well that's going to be quite key is the time difference. I don't think the China time difference favored sort of a European market for watching football. The Saudi League does. The time difference is great for us. So if they're able to land big TV deals, people are going to end up watching because a lot of players are going to end up there. So maybe it's a warning. I don't know what it is, but I think that's what the end goal or what they're looking to achieve with having the league and why they've pushed so hard for it. And we've seen it with many other sports with, I mean, they've linked up with WWE. WWE now does 2 pay-per-views every year in Saudi Arabia, as I mentioned with golf. This is something that's very intentional from them, and it's not something that's just going to go away. They're going to keep trying. They're going to keep persevering and pushing until they get the results that they want. So I guess Premier League teams need to need to, you know, get ready for that. I don't think it's going to be a flash in the pan type of thing.
Yeah, that would obviously be a pretty big turn of events either way there. And I think the fear is exactly like you were talking about with like the LIV PGA stuff is you've already gotten a lot of players and coaches coming out and saying they aren't interested in going there for things like moral reasons. And then if they just end up being in business together with UEFA or something, then you have the same situation where people are turning down like whatever's above generational wealth to not go there. Some people taking advantage of that and then potentially ending up in the same competitions anyway.
Yeah, I think the big thing as well is, sure, you could say no to a contract to go play there as a player for a club there. But if they now join the Champions League, your team has to travel there. How far does your resilience go? Do you not go to play those games? Will that cause issues for you with your club? It's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah, perhaps morbidly so. We'll go from that into something that's somehow even worse. Talking about Manchester United, who obviously on the pitch have not started the way they'd want. Two wins, two losses through four. But the just onslaught of off-the-field issues with that club just continue to mount. Obviously, the Mason Greenwood thing, they wanted to bring him back, basically got bullied by the press into not doing so. But then just ended up loaning him anyway and still keeping him on his long-term contract. Then now you have the Antony situation, which developed over the last week or so as that story kind of broke. And I realize it's a different situation, but I feel like it really highlights a really deep issue here is reportedly the dressing room was really pushing for Greenwood to be reintegrated, but Jadon Sancho has been dealing with mental health issues of his own accord. Is not liked in the dressing room, which makes it just feel really weird about what is important to the culture there. So I just wanted to ask you guys, what do you think has gone wrong there culturally? And is there anything that can be done to kind of salvage this kind of nightmare scenario that's been happening around that club lately?
Obviously, it's difficult to go case by case because, like you say, there's so much that's going wrong at Manchester United, off the field and on the field. I think you're right that it's a culture problem at that club at the moment, and it's a failure of leadership for me. We know that the Glazer family have been trying to sell or they've been open to a sale, and it seems to be dragging on, and now there's reports that the sale is off, even though there's a couple of interested parties that have got the money to do the deal. The Glazers, ever since they bought the club, have essentially just treated it as a cash cow. They take out as much money as they can. They don't invest. What money they do spend seems to be spent not sensibly. Old Trafford is crumbling. That stadium needs a lot of investment to sort of bring it up to standard, modern standards. You look at teams like Liverpool, who have put a lot of money into turning Anfield into a 21st century stadium. Arsenal, Tottenham have got brand new stadiums playing. Manchester United now lagging behind, even though Old Trafford's still the biggest. It's really, really not a good place to watch football anymore. And that all stems from the fact that the Glazers don't really want to own a football club. They just want to make a lot of money, and so owning Manchester United is a way to do that. I think there's also been a sort of chasm in leadership in terms of the manager. Ever since Alex Ferguson's retirement, United have struggled to have that sort of figurehead at the top of the club who commands respect throughout the dressing room, throughout the staff. In terms of the executives, Ed Woodward was an absolute disaster. Might have been great at signing commercial deals, but didn't seem to have a clue about the football side. The guy that they've got now is Richard Arnold. Seems to have made a real mess of the Greenwood situation. He's now doing exactly the same over the Antony mess. I think if you have one of these situations where your player is accused of the kind of things that Greenwood and Antony have been accused of, that's bad. If you have two in such a short space of time, I don't know how you go about explaining that. And to handle the Antony situation in basically the same way as the Greenwood one, it just suggests that they've learned absolutely nothing. I don't understand the conversations that are going on at that club where they've allowed this Antony thing to drag on. let's get it straight. The first allegations against Anthony came out in the summer. They've not just happened. This dates back weeks, months, not just a couple of weeks. And they've waited and waited until they had no choice but to suspend him, which is what they did with the Greenwood situation. It just beggars belief. There's just no leadership at that club. The culture seems broken. Things that you didn't even mention in your rap, Kev, like inviting a convicted paedophile who used to be in charge of the women's team to a women's fixture. Just beggars belief. I don't know how to explain what's going on there, but if I was a Man United fan, I'd be very, very concerned, because it just seems like they're not learning anything from the mistakes that they've made.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a very important point there, where you spoke about the fact that this Anthony thing has been there for a couple of weeks now. And, you know, obviously United haven't responded to it or addressed it until it's sort of become untenable, which seems quite similar to what they did with Greenwood, where they didn't address certain things until it became untenable. Maybe they need to bring people in, whether it's a third party, you know, sort of consultant to come in, or hiring people that are probably more sensitive to these situations or more, you know, but it just seems like United do not have the personnel that are able to handle these situations at the moment. The important thing for me, I think, is obviously making sure that any victims are okay, and our thoughts and prayers are going towards them. But with United, I hope that fans of other clubs aren't point scoring, and you see a lot of that on Twitter, and I still call it Twitter, and I probably will call it Twitter until the day it ends. I'll never call it X, really. But you see fans sort of trying to point score at, oh, look at what Man United are doing, my club could never, or, you know, that type of thing. One thing fans need to know is that every club has skeletons. No club is immune to this kind of stuff. It just so happens that two Man United situations have come to light. You would be surprised at the amount of times this has happened at clubs, and clubs have actively assisted in sort of quashing the situation. So let's not point score. It's not right. I think it's actually gross to point score in these situations. In terms of, yeah, the Greenwood situation, I find it weird that Man United kept him on board in terms of employment. I think the interesting thing with the Greenwood thing was that, at, you know, and also with the Anthony thing, is you have a manager currently. We're speaking about the leadership at Man United. Well, from a manager perspective and leadership from a manager perspective, we know Ten Hag has backed someone that has sent inappropriate messages to female colleagues. When Overmars got booted out of Ajax, Ten Hag was one of the people that wanted him back as soon as possible and was advocating for him. That's worrying. That has to be something that has to be spoken about. I've not seen too many people speak about that issue, but clearly, you know, that has to be, you know, there has to be a level of concern with that perspective. And when you have a club situation like Man United, where a lot of the people upstairs are more business people than football people, then a lot of the football-related leadership falls on the manager. It doesn't fall to the people upstairs. And so Ten Hag will have more authority on these situations. And, you know, it's been widely reported that him, along with, as Jamie has mentioned, along with the play, with some of the players, they were ready to welcome Greenwood in. Greenwood was training with the team. Like, but for, you know, the wider public stepping in, Greenwood would be playing for Man United right now. And I'm glad the public stepped in. And I hope in all situations like this that the public will have a voice and be able to step in such situations. But yeah, I personally think Man United need to either hire someone internally to handle these things, or hire a third party to deal with these things, because I don't think that they're capable of handling these things at the moment.
Yeah, I thought I was bringing up a lot of issues at the club, and you guys have added another two more to the pile, which really highlights just how much is going wrong at that club at the moment. Hiring an external person to come in seems like a pretty good choice. Is there anything else they can do? I feel like football cultures last so long because like there's always someone in the dressing room that was part of the previous dressing room, and then that one had someone from the one before. I guess instead of a question, I'm going to make a statement. I don't know how this gets better anytime soon.
No, I agree. I think the idea of taking external advice is probably a good one. There's just been so many missteps. Like, to go back to the Greenwood one, the fact that it was reported that they wanted to check with the women's team's players who were at the World Cup with England, therefore putting the pressure on them to be the ones that made the decision when they were trying to win the World Cup, led to players getting abused by supporters of Greenwood on Twitter. It just suggests that no one at that club has any idea how the world works as much as anything else. A real sort of naivety on the sort of executive side of that club. I mean, I talked about the sort of failure in leadership, and Taj had the great example of Ten Hag, who's already backed someone in a similar position and wanted to bring back Greenwood. He was still picking Anthony when these allegations were already coming to light. Ten Hag seems to be the kind of Ferguson figure that they were hoping they could rally around and would be the sort of guiding figure through such turbulent times for that club. But he's making bad decisions in terms of not just morality issues, but football decisions as well. So I think we can already perhaps envision a situation where Erik ten Hag is not the Manchester United manager, and then they have to really get the right appointment next time, because that club is in danger of turning from the team everyone wanted to play for to one that players will start to shun just because they keep getting things wrong. And things that you really can't afford to get wrong, these things will leave a mark. The fact that they've handled the Greenwood and Anthony situations as badly as they have, not going to be forgotten by everyone in football, fans, wider culture. This is going to be a really, really bad period for Manchester United in their history.
But I think it's also important that clubs are being asked to handle these situations, because in the past, it gets swept under the carpet. So I'm for more clubs having to, obviously I don't want, you know, victims to go through these situations, but the more these come to light, the more clubs are forced to actually handle these situations and actually get their policies in place properly. Probably in the long term, the better it's going to be for people, because as I keep saying, this is not the first, you know, Anthony and Greenwood are not the first players to do this. We've seen this happen at many clubs. We've seen, you know, a player, you know, in London play for an entire season last year, mm-hmm. where similar situations were occurring. These things happen in the Premier League. And one of my biggest issues is when we try and make these footballers into role models, I'm so against making sports people role models, because we're not with them every single day of our lives. And a lot of them are, or some of them, should I say, are engaged in things that you would not want a role model, you know, to be engaged with. And that's just the reality of the situation. And if you think about it, for many of them, from the age when they were maybe 12, 13, they've been told they're the dog's bollocks. They've never been told no since they were 12 or 13, because they're the moneymaker. They're going to be the gem that's going to lead either their family, the club, or whoever, their agent, you know, to big paydays. So this culture probably needs to be fixed at a younger age than necessarily us trying to fix it at the Anthony or Greenwood stage. At that stage, I think the law has to be enforced, and obviously that has to take its course. But in terms of fixing this culture in football, especially in the Premier League, we need some sort of organization in terms of what is going to happen with these young players that are, you know, academy players at these clubs growing up, never being told no. It just breeds a filthy culture that has been in the Premier League for years. And now we're starting to see people stand up and hopefully, you know, more people are brave enough if they want to share their experiences and call these people out, and we can sort of root this gross thing out of football.
I'm really glad you did call that out. This is, in theory, not new. This is a culture where we are now societally more willing to have these conversations, kind of shun players that have done things that are, you know, morally abysmal or are alleged to have. I don't know how much we have to couch that, considering we've seen pictures and stuff. But no, that's a good point. This is not just a Manchester United problem. This is a culture problem that has now happened twice in quick succession at Manchester United. And in theory, hearing about it is better than the years of not hearing about it that pre-existed, although it may, you know, cause secondary trauma or trigger people that have had to live through situations like that. But no, that is a good point, that this is a larger scale issue than just one individual club. We'll take a break there, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, and we are back. Jamie, we'll start off with you. We were pretty excited talking about Burnley coming into the Premier League season. Probably not the start that many would have hoped for. Currently bottom three in goals scored and worst in goals conceded. Still, people are very complimentary of Vincent Kompany's style. And it seems like nobody's even considering having the hot seat discussion. But I was just curious if you think this style will still work and the players just need more time, or if you think there's kind of a tactical tweak coming down the line.
I think it's certainly up for debate. I think the closest comparison that I can think of to the way that we've tried to play in the Premier League is Leeds under Marcelo Bielsa, right, which had some success, but they ran out of steam, and by the end they were just getting hammered every week and they had to make a change. The concerning thing for me is that when Kompany changes things during a game, we have a tendency to get worse rather than better. But on the flip side, the fixture list hasn't been particularly kind. Yes, we played three home games, but Manchester City, Aston Villa, Tottenham's not the easiest starts of the season that you could have imagined. We were supposed to play Luton away in the middle of that. We didn't because their stadium wasn't ready. So that's the game where maybe we would have got a result and been in a better position than we are now. But I wrote in my newsletter last week that I think we've been a bit naive at times, trying to play out from the back all the time, even when we've got players out of position and players who are new to the Premier League and players who are new to our club. And it just seems to be a lot all in one go. I think Kompany maybe should have used some of the players that got us promotion last year. There's players like Josh Browner who barely kicked a ball this season, even though they were starters last season. I'm not sure why he spent so much time on the bench. The change to the goalkeeper, the new keeper, James Trafford, who signed for Manchester City, I don't think he's done anything to justify playing instead of Aaron Muric, who was so good for last season. So I think there's arguably quick fixes that could be made to the personnel. But I think the tactics of it's just been sort of naive is the only way I can put it, because we just keep making the same mistakes, conceding really sloppy goals, getting caught with nowhere near enough defensive players, giving the ball away near our own penalty area. You're just going to get punished like that in the Premier League every single time. The positives are that we do look like we're going to score. I know you just said we're towards the bottom for goals scored, but we've scored a couple against Tottenham. We scored against Aston Villa. A lot of teams don't do that. And we created chances against Manchester City. We were arguably the best team for the first half of that match and just found ourselves on the end of Erling Haaland doing Erling Haaland things, really. So there have been some positives to take. I think the international break comes at a good time. The company's got 2 weeks to think about what he actually wants to do, whether he wants to be a bit more pragmatic, whether he wants to potentially get relegated, committed to this style. I think the transfer window was a strange one for us in that we spent a lot of money, sort of 90 million to 100 million on players. There's still gaping holes in the squad. We didn't sign a left back. Ian Mattson from Chelsea was a target all summer after he was on loan last season. Deadline day, it seemed like the deal was done. He turned it down. We had no backup plan. So now we don't really have a left back. We don't have a natural holding midfielder of any renown. We signed a lad who was at Bristol City last season on a free, who's allegedly a holding midfielder. I think it's a big ask for him to be the man who's going to do that job. So I think there's issues in the squad that Kompany's going to have to try and solve on the hoof. I think it's worth remembering that Kompany is still quite an inexperienced manager. He did 3 years in Belgium, 1 year in the Championship with us. So he's learning as he goes as well. Most of these players have very little Premier League experience. So it's going to be a real learning curve for everyone at the club. But I think there's going to need to be some tactical tweaks because we're just conceding far too many sloppy goals. And if you do that too often, you're just going to get relegated. There's no easier way to put it.
Yeah, I was just curious because I know you mentioned even last season, people were still asking you to hoof the ball. And you're like, we play differently now. And that's when you were having one of the best championship seasons in memory. Hopefully it gets sorted out for you and things kind of turn around here after the international break, as you say. Tad, I'll come to you now to talk about Liverpool. You were probably the first person I talked to that was like, Liverpool are going to have to sign three midfielders. And I think ultimately it ended up being four. With Szoboszlai and Alexis and Endo and Gravenberch, obviously they're late in the window. So how are people feeling about that now? It's obviously not the Caicedo Lavias that you were linked with and had that like 2 week craziness around with you and Chelsea. But how do you think people ultimately feel about the midfield you've ended up with? And do you think there's a way that Klopp can make sure that it fits into the way he wants to play?
Look, that Thursday night at 1 a.m. in the morning, so probably Friday night at 1 a.m. in the morning, when we had, by all accounts, signed Caicedo, it was absolutely jumping. From a Liverpool perspective, people were saying we were going to win the league. It was quite crazy. And obviously that ends up not being, you know, the case. I don't know if that situation is over, is all I'll say on that situation. But in terms of what they then have done, look, I think Szoboszlai coming in, I think he's a phenomenal talent. Maybe underrated in the Premier League. I don't know if other people rate him or not. But from my perspective, he's one of the young talents in European football. And he's probably going to make the Mohamed Salah sale a lot easier to stomach when that eventually happens. I think it's a when situation, not an if at this point in time. We bring in McAllister, who seems like an absolute gem. And I guess Liverpool were very fortunate in how that transpired, because before the World Cup, Brighton were thinking, well, we're going to lose this guy on a free. Let's give him a new contract, increase his wages and put in a release clause. Because, look, no one was expecting him to have the performance he had at the World Cup.
So he wasn't even supposed to be there. It was supposed to be Lo Celso.
Exactly. So at that time, the money they put into the release clause was perfectly fine. You know, we're not going to lose him for free. We're going to get 35-odd million for him. It's a great result. It's smart business. And he just happened to blow up. And Liverpool happened to know that he had that release clause, or find out that he had that release clause, and sort of executed on that transfer. So phenomenal signing. I think they've bought him for way less than what his value is. It's going to be interesting to see whether he plays deeper for majority of the time. And based on Liverpool signings, it seems like that's going to be the case. He's probably going to play deeper than maybe he was first envisioned to play. Endo, the Endo signing, I think, was one of those just admitting that we've gotten the window wrong type of signings where, look, this is a player that's available. It's a dream move for him. He would have never thought he was coming to Liverpool at 29 years old from Stuttgart. He was more than happy at Stuttgart. It was never going to happen in terms of him. He personally thought it wasn't going to happen in terms of him signing for a big club. But it's an easily attainable signing that you bring in to bring some sort of defensive midfielder into the squad, because the ones we wanted to bring in, we weren't able to bring in. I do still think he's slightly slow in terms of acceleration. So I think players can run away from him. But in terms of defensive intelligence, he's really good. His positioning is really good. And that sort of masks some of the acceleration deficiencies that he has. So hopefully he plays an important role for them. Gravenbranch is the interesting one, because this is a very unpolished diamond who, coming through at Ajax, was ridiculously talented, was on the same trajectory as the likes of Jude Bellingham when they were all coming up, in terms of what people thought about them as prospects. At Ajax, there were complaints from coaches that he didn't apply himself in training. Same thing happened when he moved to Bayern Munich. There were complaints there that he wasn't applying himself in training. Whether Liverpool can get that out of him, we will see. I think the positive thing for Liverpool fans is, one, Klopp really wanted him. And two, Klopp is arguably one of, if not the best, player development coaches in world football. And I know I complain about a lot of other things he doesn't do great, like, you know, now that he's taken over as director of football, or de facto director of football at Liverpool, which I'm not happy about. But when it comes to developing players and squeezing, you know, their full potential out of them, Klopp is one of the best, if not the best, in the world at doing that. So it's exciting from that perspective. What can Klopp get out of this player who's had issues at other clubs but has undoubted potential and undoubted talent? In terms of a midfield rebuild, when you look back at it, I don't think the club were expecting to lose Henderson or Fabinho this window. But as we spoke about earlier, when the Saudi League comes calling and they're calling at prices that you just can't say no to, you end up just making those deals and trying to figure it out going forward. So I think the midfield for Liverpool is going to be fine this season. The issue and how far Liverpool go this season is going to rest with the defense. They didn't bring in enough cover at centre-back. I think, obviously, they don't have a backup to Trent at right-back, really, when you look at it. I think Robertson is at that awkward stage where he's done a lot for the club, but he's no longer performing at the levels he was performing at. So do you keep him? Do you sell him? Do you start him? It's very awkward for him at the moment, or for the club at the moment, with what they do with him. But based on Liverpool's performances, I really think the midfield is going to be fine. They will develop. I trust Klopp when it comes to coaching. That will be fine. I think Szoboszlai is going to be low-key one of the talents of the season, but maybe won't get the attention that he might deserve. But the defense for Liverpool, that, Kev, for me, is a big worry. If the defense can hold on and stay fit, then Liverpool could probably do something special this season. But yeah, that's the big concern for them.
Gotcha. And then a 1 second answer: will Salah eventually go to the Saudi League?
100% yes.
Got it.
Oh, maybe let me say 99%. Sorry, I've experienced enough football to know not to say 100%, but 99%. And just in terms of some more depth on that, if I can, all parties are very, like, cordial, and there's been no issues in the discussions that have been had between Salah and the Saudi representatives, Liverpool and the Saudi representatives. This was a deal that could have been done this window. It just came about too late in the window, and eventually the Saudi delegation, you know, admitted, okay, we can't get this deal done this late. It doesn't favor all parties. But it's Salah's already told Liverpool he wants to go to Saudi Arabia. Liverpool have said it's okay, you can go for a certain fee. The Saudi League wants Salah. I mean, is there a more perfect signing for the Saudi League than Mohamed Salah? So all parties are ready for this deal to happen. It's just, you know, a certain fee has to be met. So there's a certain fee that needs to be met, which has been made known to the Saudi League. We can't necessarily go into details with that. But Salah, in terms of what he wants from them, that's already been sorted out. And from Liverpool's perspective, now is about trying to find a replacement for Salah before he leaves. They kind of have to take a step back to go forwards because they now have to restructure their recruitment department, which has become a bit of a mess at the moment. So they're currently restructuring that and they now have to find a replacement for Salah. But in terms of everyone's amicable, everyone is okay with the deal, there's no beef or anything like that, which I suppose is good, but sad at the same time. I love Salah. It's going to be sad when he leaves, but the fact that everyone sort of knows where everyone stands, it bodes well for Liverpool.
Gotcha. Well, kind of a mic drop moment there from you here at the end of the show, and that will do it for us today. So if you guys want to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, that'd be a good time.
Sure, thanks for inviting me as always, Kev. It's always a pleasure. I've been Jamie Smith here talking about Burnley. I write, edit, and send the No Name Ever newsletter, which covers Burnley. It goes out on Substack every Monday. And you can also follow my Twitter/X/whatever it's called this week at Jamie Smith Sport.
I will be defined, Jamie. It's Twitter. I'll be defined until the last day. You can find me on Twitter at Tad Predicts. I host the A Tad Predictable podcast on EPL Index. Thanks so much for having me on, Kev.
Yep, we are also on a nameless website. You can find us at EPL Roundtable. You can find me individually at Kevroff. And of course, you can find the show by searching it in any of your podcast apps. So anyway, massive thanks to you two again for coming on today. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.